So we are in Perikop, chapter 20, and actually the class this week is dedicated from one of the donations from the dinner back in June by Eitan Lerner in memory of Robert Klein Moshe Yaakov Ben Asher.
Oh.
Okay. So so we are in Perikop, Pasuk, Gimel, chapter 20, sentence 3, but just to remember where we are and what's going on, for myself, if nobody else. The nation gets the report, thanks to the quasi-husband of the Pilagesh, who, he may not be much of a husband, but clearly he's a good PR man. He knows how to get their attention, as he sent parts of the Pilagesh around the country to different Shvatim. We talked about whether this was a standard practice. They had the practice with animals of sending around pieces of animals, at least in the story with Shaul, we had that. But this is really unique. The nation rallies. We said that they come to gather in Mitzvah. We said they were gathered before God in Mitzvah, which could just mean when they gather that God is there, or it could mean they actually built a Mizbeach. They had an altar there from the days of Yoshua when he had this great victory in Mitzvah. And we said, pinot kol ha'am, in sentence 2. That was an important sentence in terms of where we're going today. It said that there were different ways to render the sentence. Either it meant they came from all corners, meaning everybody showed up, unlike other times in our history, everybody came. Or alternatively, Abarbanel, they retained their tribal identity. Each one sat in its own corner. Each tribe sat in its own space. Or, as Rashi says, Pinot Ka'am means the leaders of the nation, and we said that it means the elevated ones of the nation. And then we got to the Psukim Gimel Teches, and that's really what we're up to here. So sentence 3, Binyamin heard that everybody had gathered in Mitzvah. And we noted from Abarbanel that it isn't just saying that Binyamin heard, but Binyamin gathered. In other words, Shevet Binyamin decides they're not joining the main gathering. They were invited. We said that it's 12 parts and sent it all around. So Binyamin should have received a letter, so to speak. And they opted out. They said, we're not gathering with everybody else. Instead, they gather on their own. It doesn't say where, just that they gather on their own. Meaning that they are prepared for war on their side. So the Shvatim, the other tribes, don't think they're fighting Binyamin. They think they're going to do justice in Mitzvah. They're going to gather there, and then they're going to go to Givah, and they're going to take care of whatever was done, and that'll be that. Binyamin has another thought about how things should go. So in Pasuk Gimel, Vayomru Bnei Yisrael, the rest of these tribes said, Dabru, they say to this husband, that quasi-husband, Echane Yisahara Azos, tell us what happened. Tell us exactly how this came to pass. Vayan ha'ish ha'levi. So the Levi says to them, Ish ha'isha ha'nirzacha, the husband of the woman who had been murdered.
Now he's the husband.
Now he's the husband. Why?
Again. Why? He's been wronged?
No, because...
Otherwise, why would he be doing it?
Because now he's acting like a husband.
Exactly, right.
He didn't before. Before he acted like an adon. He acted like he's some kind of an owner. Mm-hmm. Now he's finally, a little late, acting like a husband. Isha isha hanirzacha vayomar. And he said, Hagiv asa asher levinyamin basi ani ufilag shilalun. He skips the whole backstory about how they ended up there. Right? He says, my Pilagish and I came to Givah in Binyamin to spend the night.
So why does he have to say Asher Levinyamin? Like, why does he emphasize that?
Probably because Givah would not have been a single location. Because it describes a geographic formation. It could be there are multiple places that are named Givah. That's what I would assume.
Givah means hill.
Correct. Place of the
right. Exactly. Right. So the so he says, we came to Giv'ah, to spend there. Vayakumu alai ba'alei ha-Giv'ah. And the people of Giv'ah rose up against me. Vayasobu alai es habayis laila. They surrounded the house against me that night. Osi di mula harog. They thought they would kill me. Vespilakshi inu. They raped the concubine, Vatamos, and she died.
Leaves out of
yeah.
You know, so what did he right? What did he leave out?
He gave me. So instead, I gave him money to say fine.
Say that.
Threw her out.
Yeah. Right. He omits that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The story he's telling is: this is the way everybody in Tanakh speaks. Mm-hmm. When you've done something wrong, you skip that part, right? Laban, when he talks about Yaakov and how Yaakov developed all the wealth off of him. You know, the fact that he's married to his two daughters, completely skips the whole deception and all the stuff that went on.
And Yaakov made him a whole lot of money.
Yeah, that's all beside the point. The notice as well, interestingly, who did he blame? Who did he say did this?
The men of Giv'ah.
Baalei ha-Giv'ah.
Yeah, the
Baalei usually has a connotation. We saw this with Baalei Shechem back in the story of Avimelech. Baalei tends to be leaders. He is alleging that it was the leadership that did this. That's the way Malcolm reads it. In other words, we read the story. It was a gang. It was a gang of rotten people within the city. But Malcolm says no. What we're talking about here is actually he's alleging that it's the leadership of the city that has done this, and he says they were after me, because they were, and what he's trying to do is play up the evil of the city and the evil of the people who had attacked them and so on,
and not his evil.
Right. Ramban actually believes that these were the powerful people in Giv'ah who did this. Ramban thinks he's telling the truth. The good people were intimidated by those leaders.
Confession of the Lords.
Yeah. Well, that's just following what I'm saying.
But originally we didn't say.
No, we said it wasn't the whole city. We said stone the whole city.
But then why didn't nobody offer the city to house?
Because they're right.
They were scared. They were intimidated. And only this foreigner guy was like, okay, whatever, I'm going to do it.
Exactly.
I see.
Exactly. So he says, I feared for my life. He omits his act of turning her over. But then he says, "Va'ochez b'filakshi," after she's already dead, right? We're in pasuk vav, sentence six. He says, "Va'ochez b'filakshi," I grabbed hold of my pilagesh, va'anatcheha, and I cut her into pieces. What did you miss stuff? I don't know if you've been following.
I read ahead.
Okay. You walk in for that sentence. Surgery on her. Yes. I sent her throughout the lot of Israel, because what these people did was just horrible. So he says, here we all are. Tell me what we should do. Let's prevent this from going any further. Let's prevent anybody from acting this way. Let's decide what we should do. So, what is the obvious thing that they should do?
And you're asking, what should we do? Like,
it's either that or a barbecue.
Right.
Like,
he kind of stacked his, you know.
Well, what is it? No,
well,
realistically, what should happen at this point?
Well, if there was a leader, they would put him to trial or put the city. You know, would be a.
How can they?
Originally, they said that. They were Bnei Belial. Only bad and bad element of the city are the ones who did that horrible thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, obviously, you should find these people and punish them.
Right. There should be an investigation. Beit Din should convene. And that's the orderly way to do it. And who should be responsible for that?
The elders of the city.
Right. The elders of the city, having a king, will ensure that this is followed. But fundamentally, this is the job of the elders of the city. The Shevet is supposed to take care of its own, as we're going to see. That's not what happens. Pasuk Tet, sentence 9. Vayakam kol ha'am ki ish echad. The whole nation rises as one. Lemor, saying, lo nelech ish la'ahalo, velo nasur ish leveso. No one is going home. No one is going to leave this site until we take care of this. Ve'ata, and now, zeh davar asher naaseh. Here's what we're going to do. La giv'a to giv'a, aleha bigoral. We are going to ascend upon Giv'a with a lottery. I'm going to read the next couple of psukim and then come back to that. But we're going to ascend upon Giv'a with a lottery. V'lakachnu asara nashim l'me'a l'chol shivtei Yisrael. From all the tribes of Israel, minus Binyamin anyway, we're going to take 10 men per 100. In other words, 10%. U'me'a la'elef. And proving that they know math, 100 per 1,000. Ve'elef l'arvava, and 1,000 per 10,000. Lakachas tzedala'am, to outfit the nation, the army, with its needs. La'asos levo'am legeva binyamin kechol hanevala asher asah b'Yisrael, so that they can go to Giv'a in Binyamin, and pay them back for this terrible thing that has been done. Ve'yaseif kol ish Yisrael el ha'ir ki ish echad chaverim. All Israel gathered to the city as one chaverim. The word chaverim does not have to mean friends. The word chaverim means those who are part of a chabura, those who are allied in an effort. Okay. Yes. So here we go. What in these last few psukim here is a little bit odd.
Lottery.
Yeah.
They came by the thousands.
Who's going to do the lottery?
Right. The first question that you have is, what is this lottery? What does that even mean? You have 400,000 men gathered. Just go. Mm-hmm. Why are we casting lots about who should be the one to go first? What is that about? That's number one. Number two, this business, as Eddie points out, with the 10 per 100, 100 per 100. Why are you emphasizing the support system? Every time you fight a war, right? How many wars have we seen between Yehoshua and Shoftim? This is the first time I can think of that we've had a conversation about how they're going to be taken care of.
Well, maybe the number that came.
They wanted to make it fair.
That to take that number of people, that would be...
Right.
Well, it's a little overkill.
Right. So one possibility is that you have that many people, you need to support all of them. This isn't the group that's going to war. You're not taking 10% to fight. You're taking 10% just to be infrastructure.
Well, the first civil war.
It is the first civil
war.
Unless you count Abimelech.
All right.
Why did they pick only a few, like a 1 per 100
10% to be the support system?
Yeah.
How much more do you need?
What does it mean, support system?
It means they have to go get food for everybody. Food.
That's what you're talking about. I thought they were picked to fight.
No, just the opposite. These ones who are not fighting. These are the managers. These are the people who are going to go find food and whatever else you need. Tents, I don't know.
The quartermaster.
Yeah. So that's a second element. And then the third element that's strange is this emphasis at the end of Pasuk Yud Aleph. Right? You want to say they all gathered. Your sentence should say, Ve'yaseif kol ish Yisrael el ha'ir. Or el ha'ir ki ish echad. What are you throwing in chaverim for? Mm-hmm. Even if chaverim does not connote emotional friendship, it's unnecessary. Who needs to say chaverim? They gathered all ki ish echad.
Because unity wants.
It's showing the unity.
So because Linda said it, I will jump to that. If you take a look at source number 3, Abarbanel was the one who rendered pinot as corners, meaning each tribe is hanging out in its own corner. So now we see Ki ishachar chaverim, Abarbanel comments, rotze lomar, lo be'erech hayosam shvatim nifradim. They're not coming in as separate tribes. They're so upset about what they've heard that now they view themselves as one. Each one helping the next. Borrowing language of a pasuk from elsewhere.
You know what it almost sounds to me like? This ganging up on social media and everything like that. All of a sudden, everybody is so upset about this one issue. And it sounds very strange.
And it's also typical of how things, you know, when there's a war in Israel, it doesn't matter if you're Ashkenaz, Sephardi, this, that, you know, religious, non-religious, everyone unifies against a greater enemy.
Right.
They've been doing that because of their own people.
Right. But they view that as, in this case, the enemy. That's exactly that. They're so horrified that, yes, and I'm happier with this result than if nobody had shown up, which, unfortunately, you could also see happen. You know,
is this the usual type of thing to happen where they, you know, women are here, chattels that, okay, they just, you know, destroyed a woman, and then he cut her, and
so,
I mean, is that
so the answer
normal?
Is no. The answer is it's not. If this were the normal thing, then no one would have shown up.
Okay.
Number one, he wouldn't have been outraged. And number two, they wouldn't have responded.
I don't know if he's so outraged. To me, he comes across as false outrage.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. It just does.
Why? But what is there about it to indicate that?
Well, he gave it away.
Yeah, he gave it away.
He gave it away because he thought he was saving his life. Which, he was saving his life.
Yeah.
He would have been in
and then, like,
I'm not saying he's right, but that's what he did.
She crawled back in and she died, and he didn't even care enough to say,
exactly,
you know, give her CPR or something.
He thought she was alive. He said, come on, let's go. Yeah, CPR is a non-starter at this point in our history.
But, you know, he's not going to use our standard today. Things that
happen. Right. But I think, no, I don't see this as false horror. I think that he woke up finally. Once she's dead, he wakes up too late. But that's what I see. He's outraged. He does something which is clearly not the norm for them, or again, it wouldn't have rallied everybody. And they all show up ready to do something about it. The problem is with what they show up to do, which we'll see. But
they have shown up had he not chopped up the bodies.
I don't think so. They would just hear about it.
Let's say they reported it. Well,
yeah, I don't know. Don't
is
know.
He only outraged because she ended up dead and not just defiled? Like,
he dared to be defiled. He couldn't be outraged at that.
I don't
know. For sure.
I don't know. Ricky.
What I was thinking is instead of going back home, this man, and getting his people to avenge his Pinagish wife, with those people, he involved the entire country.
Yeah.
And that is a little strong.
It's very strong. But I think this was not normal. And I think if he goes back home and he gets his allies, he doesn't necessarily have means to go to war against Giba.
Well, not an entire war. You go, you find the people, you beat them up. I mean, there's a lot of instances where our people went and they fought all the
Yeah, but that's not what, I mean, if you have an option, if you're looking at taking on a city, then you look for a bigger population than just your friends and your hometown.
He already wanted to punish the entire city rather than just the people who did it.
I think that's what he means. When he says, now let's decide what to do, he knows exactly what he wants to do. Yes. So that's one point. In terms of their alliance, they've overcome their separate tribal identity. But go back to the lottery, because I think the lottery is a very important piece here. What else do we use lotteries for?
Conscription.
Mm-mm. Subscription. Not in Tanakh.
Choose a date.
Well, Haman uses the lottery to choose a date. Okay, what else? What else do we have in Tanakh?
In Yeshua, they had lotteries for the land.
They use a lottery for the land, that's right.
In Purim, they had a lot.
They use lottery as a way to tell what God wants. That's the goal of a lottery.
Really?
The point of a lottery is to say, this is not something we are doing, this is something that God is doing. I left it out of my hand. If you think of the Shnei Se'irin, right, on Yom Kippur, you have the two goats, and the decision of which one is going to be for God and which one is going to be the scapegoat, the Azazel, that's done by a lottery. When Yehoshua goes to, after they lose to Ai, and Hashem says to Yehoshua, somebody has sinned, go find out who it is, he does a lottery, essentially, in order to determine who it is. He has them pass in front of the Mishkan, and then whoever is guilty freezes, isn't able to move from that spot. It's leave it in God's hands, rather than have us take care of it. And the point is that there should be no allegation of bias. That's usually the way we take it. But what they're doing here effectively is saying, we want God to be part of this. This isn't something where we want to do this on our own. We want the divine blessing. And so we ask God, who should go first? And we'll see that more explicitly in the ensuing section.
So far gone. Like, if they're actually gathered together, they're trying to follow, doing a lottery.
Yeah.
I mean...
Absolutely. The problem is just, well, we'll see what the problem is. Yes, they have elements of doing something that is appropriate. They're just off.
Well, they don't have to guide them.
Mm-hmm. The other piece here is the support system. Take a look on your sheet, please, at Ralbag in number 2. Number 1 was just the Abarbanel from last time about them rallying. But number 2, Ralbag says regarding the support system, Leman yuchlu lehisakev sham ad baram hara, in order for them to be able to stay until they could eradicate this evil, shalchu asirit hamachane lekachatzid alam, they sent off a tenth of the camp to go get the needs of the camp. In other words, what Ralbag is suggesting is that they are prepared to fight as long as they need to. If it takes us 10 years, we're going to do it. And that's why we're spelling out the support system, to say, they're digging in for the long haul. Whatever we have to do is what we're going to do. Now, I couldn't resist one odd Gemara. It has nothing to do with this discussion, but it's just too good not to bring in. It's a Gemara that appears in a couple of places in Shas. It's in source number 4, Gemara Chagiga. It's talking about a Mishnah which is dealing with issues of credibility for purity issues, Toma and Tahara. You know that, going back to the Beis HaMikdash, you have a practice of maintaining purity, both by people who wanted to just in general be Tahor, they wanted to be ritually pure, and people who needed it for particular rituals. So people who are going to go into the Beis HaMikdash, into the temple, have to be pure. People who are going to eat from the Karbanot, from the offerings, have to be pure. People who want to eat from the tithes, Truma, Maser, not all of the Maser, some of it need to be pure. Purity will mean, generally speaking, not going near the dead. But also, after all sorts of circumstances, men and women would need to go to mikvah. It wasn't the easiest thing to maintain. And as a result, you had some people who were very careful about it, and some people who were not careful about it at all. You had three populations. One population are known in the days of the Gemara as Chaverim. Chaverim not meaning friends, once again, but rather Chaver there means someone who is a member of the club, which is to say, someone who is very careful about Truma and Maser, such that, and purity and so forth, such that you can always trust them. If they give you produce, you know that it was tithe. Even if you find produce in their house, the Gemara gives the case in which a chaver passes away and they find produce in his house, you can assume that it was already tithed, he would have taken care of it right away, he wouldn't have left it. That's the status of being a chaver, and it's actually formally accepted. Like you say, I am going to follow these rules, and then everybody knows you're fine, purity and impurity, tithing and so on. That's one side. Opposite extreme, people who are known not to be careful at all, they don't do this. And then you have the middle population. In the middle population, I don't know. I don't know whether they're careful or not. Sounds very familiar, no? Sounds just like kashrus in our own day.
Pick and choose.
we just don't know what their status is. Are they careful? Are they not careful? So there's a law of demai regarding produce that they give, that you can assume they did certain things, but you can't necessarily assume they did everything. But the Mishnah in Chagiga says, and this is source number 4, the beginning of the source, it's a quote from Mishnah, Uvishas haregel, at the time of the regel, meaning the shalosh regalim, 3 yamim tovim, I added in the words in brackets for context, hakol ne'emanim, af al hatruma, everybody is credible, even regarding purity for the sake of truma, meaning even if I'm a kohen and I'm going to go eat truma, if I was over at their house, if I was walking in the street, I shook their hands, whatever, I don't have to worry that I might be impure, because everybody is assumed to be pure at the time of the Yom Tov. Not because you say, Well, of course they're pure because they got ready to go to the Beis HaMikdash. Not because of that. The Chachamim simply said, you are able to assume that they are, in fact, tahor, that they are pure. So the Gemara asks, Menahani Mili, where in the world did you get that from? How, on what basis do you make such an assumption? So Amar Yeshua ben Levi. Yeshua ben Levi says, the Amar Krok, the Pasuk says, sound familiar? Vayezov kol ish Yisrael el ha'ir. Right, this is our pasuk. It's a pasuk Yud-Aleph. Vayezov kol ish Yisrael el ha'ir. All Israel gathered to the city ki ish echad as one man. Chaverim. Hakasav asan kulan chaverim. The text made them all chaverim, which on one level is an allusion to the word chaver as they would end up using it in the days of the Mishnah and the Gemara. But on a very basic level, it's saying when all Israel gathers, they are chaverim. They're all allied. You treat them all as one. It's an expression of the power of their unity. It's just such an irony that we draw it from the story of Pilegesh Begiva.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
That's your comparison to what the Jews are like when they go for Aliyah LeRegel to Yerushalayim.
Yes, the lowest of the low.
Yes, this is where we got this from. It's a very strange thing. It reminds me of, there was a song, it was Mordechai, but David Avram Fried, one of those, back in the 80s and 90s, Chavra Chavra Islay. And it was a big hit. They say they had it at all the weddings. Chavra Chavra Islay, Chavra 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 Islay. You heard it back then, sorry?
What's Islay?
Well, it's Aramaic. Chavra Chavra Islay, your friend also has a friend. It's an expression of everybody being friends, and it's so nice. Except the context for it is the Gemara Bava Basra that you are very familiar with. The Gemara Bava Basra talks about the idea that if someone says something to a couple of other people, that now three people know it, you have to assume that everybody knows it. Because this one has a friend, and that one has a friend, and that one has a friend, and therefore it's Lashon Hara, the Lashon Hara gets everywhere. That's the context for it, is about how Lashon Hara spreads. And then it becomes a nice song for weddings. Go figure. Anyway, that's the deduction from here. Okay, going back to our point though, the nation has gathered and they're motivated, and yeah, fundamentally they're motivated in a positive way for all of everything that preceded this, and for all of what's going to come from this. At this moment in time, they're trying to do the right thing. We're consulting with God. We're ready to fight against evil for however long it takes. We're allied. Aren't these people wonderful? You just wish you could stop here, but you can't. Yeah, Ricky.
They were going to fight the people of Gibeah for the people of Benjamin.
Gibeah.
So, yeah, all of these
people
are going to fight.
Well, only the one that goes first. Right? They're doing a lottery to decide who should go first. Maybe that'll be enough to take care of it. We don't know.
So they're still planning to stay there for a long time, that they need Siddah, because it's going to take 400,000 people that long to defeat.
They don't know. They're prepared to do whatever it takes.
Doesn't occur to them that there's like a little discrepancy in their numbers?
I don't think so. I think for two reasons. Number one, because they're not planning on 400,000 people descending on the city. They've said, we're going to send a group first, right? We're going to have this lottery to decide who goes first. But number two, because they know by now that Binyamin hasn't shown up. And so they have a sense already that there may be more resistance. It wasn't their intent.
They realize he hasn't shown up.
Because you see everybody there, and there's no one from Binyamin.
A banner that places. Yeah.
Well, no, but
it's just chaos.
Number one, you don't. Hang on. Number one, you don't have. You don't have anyone there from Binyamin. Like everybody's talking to everybody else, and Naftali is there, and Reuven is there, and whatever. And you notice at a certain point there's no one from Binyamin. And then second, and in particular, even if we don't go with Abarbanel's point about them originally camping in different areas. But fundamentally, Binyamin is where this happened. They're making inquiries already. What happened? Do you know what happened? Well, I don't know. I'm not from there. Well, let's go find someone from Binyamin.
Oh, no, they can't.
There is no one here from Binyamin.
But there's just so many people. You can't even imagine.
Yeah. No, it's true. This is a mopsy. So let's see where it goes. Pasuk Yud Beis, sentence 12. We'll do 12 to 17 here. An attempt at diplomacy.
So before you start, please, yeah. What is this?
Oh, B'nai. You'll see. We're not there yet. That's in Pasuk Yudgimel.
What is the...
Right. I'll get that.
Sorry. Okay.
Vayishlechu shivtei Yisrael anashim b'chol shivtei Binyamin le'mor. The tribes of Israel sent messengers throughout Binyamin. Messages as follows. Mahara'a hazos asher nihyasa b'chem. Now, the word ma could be rendered in different ways. Literally, we would usually render it as what? Right? So I'll just take it for now, but we're going to come back to this. What is this bad thing that has happened among you? Ve'ata, and now, tenu es ha'anashim b'nei v'liyal asher ba'giv'a, turn over the wicked people from Giv'a, unamisem, and we will kill them. Unva'ara ra'am Yisrael, we'll eradicate evil from Israel. End of quote. That's the message. Repeated three times, right? V'lo avu, the word, next word should be b'nei, Binyamin, l'shmoa b'kol acheihem b'nei Yisrael. The people of Binyamin are not interested in listening. So Ricky asked me about the missing word there. If you have a shoftim that's written on cloth, as a Megillah would be, which is not common in our day, since when are you going to use it? It's in shuls that lain from a cloth, they may have it because in Bishalach we'll do Shiraz Devorah, like a couple of haftarot that'll be useful for it.
But
it doesn't matter. But the way it should, in the, if you had one on a cloth on parchment, you would just have a gap.
I have a gap.
Yeah,
I have a gap.
That's all that will show up in it. In various printed texts, they do different things to show you, hey, there's something here. You're more familiar with this, hopefully, in Megillas Rus, right? If you read Rut, there are numerous gaps like that, and then the Baal Kriya has to know there's a word that's missing here. We have a Masorah, we have a tradition that's the way we write it. Unclear why. I haven't seen any explanation for why the word B'nai is missing. Frankly, the sentence could be read without the word B'nai altogether. Would have read just fine. Yeah. But there's a gap there, and by tradition we are taught that the word B'nai should appear there. So they did not listen to the voice of their brethren. They say, nothing doing. The people of Binyamin, they gather to Giv'ah. They are going to take on the rest of the Jewish people. So that's where we have to get to. We're just going to read this section first. Vayispakdu b'nei Binyamin b'yom ha'hu me'he'orim esrim v'shisha elef ish sholeif charev. From their various cities, meaning aside from Giv'ah, they rallied 26,000 swordsmen. Levad miyoshvei ha'giv'ah, aside from the residents of Giv'ah, hispakdu shva meyos ish bachur, you get another 700 who are ready to fight. Mikol ha'am hazeh, and from this entire group, the 26,700, shva meyos ish bachur, 700 of them, were iter yad yemino, were lefties. Their right hands weren't used. Kol zeh, all of them, koleya ba'evin el hasa'ara v'lo yachti. They could throw a rock. This is a slingshot.
Yeah.
They could throw a rock at a target. Sa'ara is a hair. So the Mepharshim, the commentary say, even if the target was like a hair's breadth, they could throw it, and lo yachti, they wouldn't miss. It's very interesting. It's very interesting that there's specifically lefties who are trained to do this. You remember our other lefty was Ehud Ben Gera, the Shofate, who had the dagger that he was able to use and to kill Eglon. And there, being a lefty was seen as a deficiency in a warrior. That was the whole point. Therefore, they didn't think he was dangerous.
Still use their left.
But
it's trickery.
Yeah.
Nobody expects it.
Right.
Can I go back to the Binyamin issue? Does that mean that the values of Binyamin were not offended by...
So that's one of the things we have to ask. I have a few questions. One question is this question. Why in the world does Binyamin defend Giv'ah? But what else should you ask?
Why haven't they taken care of it themselves?
Well, okay, that goes hand in hand with this.
Why are they outraged by it?
Yeah, but what else should we be asking about this whole section?
Well,
that they only gather 26,000.
Well, that's all that Binyamin has to offer. I mean, if you do the math, that actually works. Right? Meaning, if you multiply it out, right, they have 26,700. If you multiply that out by 11 to get what you should have from the rest of the nation, by 10. It's them versus 10 because Levi doesn't fight. So if you multiply that out, you know, by 10, so you'll have, you know, 267,000 people. Everybody else has 400,000.
Right.
Maybe
some,
they're a smaller shape, or whatever.
Bigger.
Right.
Right. So how do they think they're going to beat the 400,000? How do they think that we're going to
win?
And also,
slingshots are good. Why
are they rushing to war right away? Why don't they talk to them and say, you know?
No, and why do they?
The nation tried diplomacy. Binyamin is not interested.
We have all our men ready.
Yep.
So why are they defending?
So I'm going to ask you a question that you're all skipping.
Whatever, they're
you're skipping a question here. Go back again to Pasuk Yud Gimel. What did we demand that Binyamin do? I say we. I've taken sides. What did we demand that Binyamin do? No. That wasn't what they demanded. Keep on reading. Turn them over and we will kill them.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm biased because I live in the 21st century in North America.
Why have they tried?
There's no trial. Turn them over, and we will execute them.
Because we know that they did bad things.
Innocent until proven guilty.
And we have a thing called Beis Din. We have courts.
What did they do?
Okay, but then you have to know that, and you have to notice that, because it's important in terms of figuring out Binyamin's response. Right? Binyamin is saying, maybe he's saying, this is a lynch mob. So, not so fast on this. But let's go through this slowly. First of all...
But when they know that these people in Giba are all bad, like, they have a reputation. Like, the whole city knows that there's gangs and there's bad people.
Yes, let's just go kill them. This is the Philippines. Right? Duterte, right? We do have a concept of due process. We do something. Right. So
in those days there wasn't. There was no judges and no king.
That's the point. That's why this goes where it goes.
Yeah.
So first of all, we called them. It's very interesting. There's a turn of phrase here in Pasuk Yud Beis. Shivtei Binyamin, right? Shivtei Yisrael and Shivtei Binyamin.
Yeah, why
Shivtei? They're not Shvatim. Shvatim are tribes.
Like logo. What's his?
The wolf.
The
elf, no.
Oh, wolf.
Yeah, Binyamin's the Avitraf. The simple read is that these are just the families of them. Rashi adds that Binyamin has 10 kids, right? We know that, that's true. Bela, Pavecha, Vashbel, Keran, Naman, Echiv, Arosh, Mupim, Bechupim, Ba'art. That's our list. Which, when you combine them with Menashe and Ephraim, make 12. In other words, the 10 sons of Binyamin, 2 sons of Yosef makes 12, and so it's as though Rachel has 12 Shvatim. Rashi notes this here. So we call them Shvatim. They're Shivtei Binyamin, so to speak. Rachel gets 12 Shvatim. The Radak adds that what you really have here is 10 families, because of those 10 sons of Binyamin, fighting opposite 10 tribes. Because Levi sits it out. So the people say to them in their message, Mahara'a Hazos, which we rendered temporarily as, what is this bad thing? But it can't mean, what is this bad thing? Because they know exactly what the bad thing is. They heard the story already. So why are they asking, what is this bad thing? Those who have a translation here, how does it translate the beginning of the inquiry in Pasuk Yud Bet? Mahara'a Hazot.
And the tribe of Israel sent men through all the tribes of Benjamin, saying, what wickedness is this that is done among them.
So that's hard as a translation, just because, again, they already know what happened. Mm-hmm. What do you mean, what is this? Do all your translations render it as what is?
Yeah. Oh.
Okay, so the commentaries offer two other possibilities. Sorry? Yechezkel Kaufman takes the view that Eileen just said. He says they're asking, how could this have been allowed to happen? But Abarbanel offers you another approach, which actually is coming up on our calendar, not too long from now, but not too soon either. They're expressing shock at this terrible thing that has happened and say, you know, the word ma is, how could such a thing be? Not like how practically, but well, not that ma, but it's an expression of shock. He's saying ma, right? So I forget who it is, but on the Haggadah, ma nishtana halayla hazem, he called halaylot, says that it's an expression of shock, like wow, this night is really different. Is the way to read that line. So here, Mahara'ah, they're shocked. What is this that you allowed to happen? And they say, we are going to execute them. Turn them over, we're going to kill them. And here we get into a fascinating debate among the commentaries as to who is right and who is wrong. Take a look at source number 5. Don Isaac Abarbanel, he thinks, absolutely, death penalty for a lot of them, and don't think twice. He writes about it in multiple places. I brought you two quotes. In source number 5, he says, "Imayos hadavar hazek harabashevet Binyamin levad." He said, "You know, this only happened in Binyamin. It didn't happen throughout Israel. We keep talking about this thing being Ra'av the Yisrael and all that. It is local." V'shemin adin hayara ui shan sheshivto hein yivaru hara hazos v'anish vachotim u'shar shvatim yeshuvu le'al haleihem. What should happen is Binyamin takes care of punishing the wrongdoing. Everybody else goes home. Yisrael chashashula arba dvarim. But Israel was concerned about four things if they were to leave this to Binyamin. Rishon, first of all, Shein melech vein shofet b'Yisrael. There is no king. There's no judge. Meaning the shoftim type judge. V'aya sham klalut Yisrael im Sanhedrin kulam. The Jews are there with the Sanhedrin. There is a Sanhedrin. There's just not a shofet leader. Ukiilu hayu heim lechlalusam v'makom melech leyos b'socham sanhedri gedola kolim mishpat kol Yisrael. So they said, we function as the shofet. There's a notion that in the absence of a of a melech, the power of the king actually devolves upon the nation. It goes to the nation as a whole to do what a king would do. And this is an idea that's found in various sources regarding royal authority. It's one of the basic roots of democracy within Judaism, is the idea that the king's power comes from the nation, and if there's no king, the power goes back to the nation as a whole. That's number one. So they feel like it is their responsibility. There is no king, we're the king. Sheni, second, he says, She'im b'nei Yisrael k'shar ha'umos. We're not like other nations. Shekol mishpacha mehem ledarko panu, where each family goes its own way. Aval ashvatim kulam b'nei ish echad. Our tribes are all descendants of one man. V'chulam misachtim ke'echad. We all unite as one. V'arevim ze lazeh. We're responsible for each other. So don't tell me Binyamin will take care of it, because it's on us also. So number one, we have the role as king. Number two, we have the responsibility. Shlishi, third, Shahayah Acheda Zez Zimav, Hu Avon Plili. The crime was such a terrible crime. It wasn't a parking ticket. And then finally, Revi'i, Shahayah Zacheid Domel Chatat Sodom V'Amorah, Sharaf Cham Hashem. This sin resembled that of Sodom and Amorah, which God then destroyed. So they felt the gravity of it and the scope of what was done wrong, and their role mandates that they act. That's one set of comments that he makes. Then he has another set of comments just a few psukim later, in which he says there were really five separate sins involved, each of which warranted the death penalty. He goes through five. I only brought you the fifth one here because I thought it was interesting to see. The first one is the mob attempt against the man. That's number one. Number two is what the mob actually did to this woman. He follows the view that this Pilegish arrangement is more like marriage than others do. In other words, we brought the Gemara that we thought said that in Pilegish situation, there's no Kiddushin, right? There's no ring, and there's no Ketubah. He follows the view that suggests there's no Ketubah, but there is Kiddushin. In which case, that makes this essentially a rape of a quasi-married, but really almost fully married woman. And then third, he views it as a mob act of Hamas, like the Dor HaMabul, the generation of the flood, where they just take by force. Fourth, the murder of the Pilegesh, the fact that she died. And then fifth, take a look at source number 6. He says, Avachinah HaMishit, the fifth point, the fifth crime for which they felt they had to act, מפני שבני הגבעה כיוונו במעשה הזה לכלוס הרגל ממקומם. Was that the people of Gibeah intended to get rid of all travel from their area. They were, he reads it, they're like stone. As far as he's concerned, they are like stone. V'shol ya'avor od be'artzam isha isha. They don't want men and women traveling through their land. Therefore they were liable for life. Meaning liable for death. Kifi ha'mishpat ha'medini. Based on what is national law, lasos geder usyav lishar ha'arim, v'chol yisrael yishmu'u v'yirau v'lo yizidun lasos od kadavar raza. He says the point is, the nation has the right and the responsibility to make sure that a proper society exists. If they are going to set up a situation in which they say, we have free rein to harm anybody who goes through our area, even if they hadn't done any of the previous four things, that alone is reason for the death penalty for them. That's the view of Abarbanel. He disagrees with Ramban, he disagrees with Malbim, who had said that that wasn't what happened, it was just a mob, and they were people of desire. That's not the way he reads it. He reads it as this was actually everybody in the city, and it was a policy.
Not to be comfortable, is that it?
Yes, to create such a... And when it's on a municipal level, then it has to be punished in a grave way. That's Abarbanel. Malbim disagrees on most of this. Malbim says, in source number 7, I skipped part of it and I'll say it outside, and then we'll go through the rest. But Malbim says, the truth is, all of those sins would not be subject to murder charges on various technicalities. So, for example, they didn't actually murder her because she only died afterwards, and maybe it could be written off to something else. If you were, you know, a good defense lawyer, you could find a way out of those. Then why are they putting them to death? So he writes in source number 7. He says, "Im hayu hochem bazachar mishpata Torah b'ni don prati." Had they followed the Torah's laws for a particular case, meaning individuals with this set of charges, lo hayu ba'aleya giv'an chayevim mita, they wouldn't have been liable for death. Kamo shekasav ha-Ramban, as in fact Ramban writes, as we'll see, shamasha ratzu lanoso so hayarak machshav alavasu b'fo'al. So one example is they wanted to rape him, but they didn't actually do it. So, you know, Barbadel says that alone is subject to death, what they wanted to do to him, but they didn't actually succeed. And he goes on through the rest of the charges. And then he says, Raksha Yisrael hitkanu, al kinasa begahalu v'firsum. But Israel was outraged because this was done in public. Shebazen hidonim kedin kofrim. He says, they have the status of kofrim. Kofrim not meaning denier of belief in God. Kofrim in the sense of denier of law. As I translated, they're outlaws. Kirabim hamis asfim l'nevalah gedolah kazos b'shat nefesh. He says, when so many people gather to do such a terrible thing, and they do it b'shat nefesh, they do it without any fear, just at will. Vim kolav ratim shenitztarfu b'maaseh zos, with all the details of this event, hem krovim li'ir nidachas. It's like an Ir Nidachat. An Ir Nidachat, remember, from Chumash, is a city that worships idols entirely. And the city is condemned. Not as a set of individuals who worship idols, as a unit. And therefore they said, we could execute them just to prevent people from behaving this way, based on the need of the moment. But oh, this can only be done by a king. Because kings have the power of execution. O klalut Yisrael im hasanhedrin b'roshayim, or by the entire nation, like Abarbanel wrote, with the Sanhedrin leading them. So both Abarbanel and Malbim take the view that there is a meta reason to execute them. Abarbanel thinks that it's the specific sins and then the meta point. Malbim just goes straight to the meta point and he says, that's it. And if you look in Pasuk Yud Gimel, right, go back to the language, there are important words there. In the end of the speech that they address to Binyamin, Unvara Ra'am Yisrael, we will eradicate evil from Israel. It's not about punishing a particular crime, it's about the fact that evil has been done in Israel and we have to make sure that that is not allowed to pass. But here's something really striking. Ramban thinks they're wrong. Ramban is always the icon, not always, that's not true. Ramban is often the iconoclast. When everybody has one point of view and one angle on who's right and who's wrong, Ramban will suddenly pipe up and say, actually, there's another way to look at it. Let's take a look at verse number 8. He says, because the people of the city had wanted to do something terrible like Sodom, the tribe said, we need, just like we've said so far, we need to fence this in. This shall not be said in Israel. Like they said, let's eradicate evil from Israel. So far, so good. Keep in mind, by the way, Ramban is writing before Abarbanel or Malbim, right? Ramban is 13th century. Abarbanel is the very, very end of the 15th century. And Malbim isn't until the 18th century. So they've seen what Ramban had to say. Ramban did not see what they wrote. V'zeh ha'din u'mimasha amru rabbeinu. And he says, the basis for the tribes saying, we have to act, is a Gemara in Sanhedrin, which says, based in makin v'onshin shalom in ha'Torah, that the court is empowered to hit people and to punish without license from the Torah. V'lo lavrol divrei Torah, not to violate Torah, el laso siag la Torah, but defense in the Torah. This is a very important principle. It's called extrajudicial punishment, right? Which normally, in society, they're not a fan of. But remember that it's very hard within the Torah to carry out a death penalty. All sorts of restrictions make carrying out a death penalty extremely unlikely. And we know this, you're familiar with the Gemara, where they say if a court killed once in 70 years, it was considered to be bloodthirsty, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, had I been on such a court, they never would have killed anybody, it's not possible. And we know all about that, and the fact that there is an imperative that the judges face, that in capital cases, they are supposed to try to find the defendant innocent. The Torah says, V'itzilu ha'idas ha'rotzayach. The Gemara says that the mission of the court is to try to find the defendant innocent. The problem is that when you create a legal system which everybody knows you can't carry out the penalty, you're just asking people then to walk all over the law. Well,
and maybe that's why we say innocent until proven guilty.
Well, it's certainly a model like that. That not necessarily because of presumption of innocence, but because we don't want to carry it out. However, and this is the big however, the courts have an ace up their sleeve, and that is u'bi'arta hara mikirbecha. If they feel that something has to be done, if they feel there is a murderer out there and he's getting away with it because we don't have two witnesses who warned him and who can testify and all of that, it's up to them. They are able to say, we are going to carry out the death penalty anyway. Not because the law says so, but because the law empowers us to protect the community, and this is what we feel is necessary. Now, obviously, in any society, this opens concerns for abuse. Hopefully you're helped by the fact that there are 23 judges on this court and 23 Jews can't agree on anything.
24 opinions.
But that's the card that he says they're playing here. Ramban says they're going based on this, based in Makin Va'onshin Shalom and HaTorah, that a court is able to carry this out even though they're not fulfilling any particular mandate from the Torah, just because they feel this is necessary for the protection of the Torah, for the protection of the community. So then he goes on, though, and watch what happens. He notes something which those of you who have read ahead already know, which is there are going to be a series of battles with Binyamin, and Yisrael is going to lose the first two battles. So he says that's a punishment to them because they were wrong. He says, "Ulufidati, in my view," this is the part where he goes against everybody else. Shezer on Shamsha Yisraeli hina gave batchila. That's why they were punished, such that they lost first. They got hit first. Mipnesh, meaning at the beginning of the war. Mipnesh shalo haisam ilchamana seis min hadin. Because this war was not licensed by the law, right? This was extrajudicial. You know who should have been carrying out the extrajudicial punishment? Binyamin. Your job is to tell Binyamin, go take care of it. Not to go overstep. He quotes to the Sifri, the Medrash on Sefer Devarim, that the court of the tribe is the one that's supposed to punish the tribe. So, well, that's now where we have to go with this. Is so, what's going on? Why does Binyamin, in fact, defend Gibeah? So we're not going to answer the question today because we're short on time with it, and there's a bit to see. But just take a look at Pasuk Yudalid, sentence 14, where you see the response. Vayeyasvu b'nei Binyamin min ha'arim ha'givasa. They gather to Gibeah. Latzeis la milchama im bnei Yisrael, to go to war with the Jews. Abarbanel says you have to see, realize this. There are two crimes here for Binyamin. Number one, they don't punish the people of Gibeah, and number two, they rally to war in their defense. At least abstain, right? Why in the world are you coming to defend them? That's the big problem. So the question we have to pick up with next time is, why does Binyamin defend Gibeah? What is it that leads them to do this? And we're going to see. I have four answers for this question, but we'll have to see what this is about. So, God willing, next week we are at TK's house,
30 Theodore.
Unless, I'll just ask the question. Does anyone want to do a Purim shiur as opposed to doing a Shoftim shiur?